Okay. Hello, everyone. Hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
I've got my earphones. I just need to go and get them. 1 second.
Right. Just turn this on a bit. Get going another couple of minutes, there's probably a few more to join.
I am back.
Good.
Hello, hello.
Oh, how's everybody?
Can't hear anything. Well, we're talking, Miriam. We're talking.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you put your microphone on or yours? Whatever. Okay.
Well, it's going to be a busy session today, Peter. There are a lot of questions in.
Yes, I know. It's a popular subject, obviously. Might have to go more into this one.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
Everything's good if you have solutions. That's the thing.
Yeah. I was talking about the evolutionary arms race today.
Oh, dear.
I took a shot of that. What is it? The mineral, the peat stuff from Canada.
Oh, that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I took a shot of that today, so.
How was that? Did it energise you? Yeah, I bet.
It certainly hasn't energised me, but I'm curious to see what exits. I'm going to do a foot bath tomorrow, I think, and see what happens via a foot bath. Excited to be here, and we're excited to have you, especially all the way from Vienna. How wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful, yep.
I say all the way from Vienna. We're all the way from Thailand.
Yeah, well, we're here.
We're here
all over the world, haven't we?
Exactly. We are global. Just a few announcements to do at the beginning as well. No, Kayleen, you can keep your mic off. And then if you've got any questions, what you do is you type them in the chat. And then what I do is I make sure that all the questions get filtered through to Peter so that he is able to answer them. We have a very large number of pre-submitted questions for today's topic, and we do only have an hour. So I will get through as many as I can, and I will do them in the order in which they came in. And as always, those questions that get pre-submitted prior to the Q&A itself, they will get priority. But that doesn't mean that you can not write your questions in the chat. I encourage you to do so, because we might have time to get through everything. And if we don't, then your questions can be put into the MeWe group, and then Peter can answer them in there for everyone to see his responses. So on that note, Peter, are you okay if I make a start?
Yes, that's fine.
All right, would you like to start recording?
Okay, where are we? It's recording, according to this.
Oh, right. Are we recording already? Oh, yes, we are. Yeah, because I got the little notey thing as I joined. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. So happy Saturday, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are. It's a wonderful, sunny and hot day here in Thailand today. What have I got to say to you? Well, today, Peter will be talking about demonic possession. I hope that you have had the opportunity to read the blog. If you have not, don't do it now, because he's going to talk about it and you'll miss that. So just you can have a read of that in your own time afterwards. And then later on afterwards, we have our magical monthly magical the workshop. We've got the workshop where Peter will be discussing dark psionics. Yes, Joyce, yep. It is a tongue twister, and I never get it right. He will be talking about dark psionics and giving very powerful talismans for you to use in the dark way. Peter, do you want to give a sentence or two about what you're going to be covering in the workshop? Because it's not too late for you to join if you wish to.
It's all the nasty stuff, basically. For those who are familiar with my psionic chart, you're going to do that anyway, basic psionic chart. I'm going to be giving you a lot of new talismans, which are used for very destructive purposes. You'll be learning how to take a person, enemy's defenses down, how to remove the shields, how to destroy the servitors, destroy the aura, and have various forms of attack to actually finish them off. Because basically, these are people who have had to fed up trying to defend themselves when they hit back hard. So you're going to get the nasty stuff this time.
Indeed. And I'm sure there are one or two of us, if not many more, on the call that could do with that help and support. So if you are a membership student, then obviously make sure that you have registered so that you get the join link and you can come and join us at 30 minutes past the next hour. If you are not a member, then you can still join. There's no problem. And the link has been put in the chat there. So if you want to learn more about psionics, if you want to learn how to use these talismans and what you can do with them, then please do come and join us. And you can also have the opportunity to join the membership as well, which means that you'll get to join all of the next workshops. Can you remember what they are, Peter? Next month and the month after? I've got them here, if not.
I can't remember offhand, no.
No, me neither. I'll have a look and I'll put them in there. Yeah. Yes, and just a reminder that if you are a magical membership student, you must register for the Zoom call now so that you get the join link so you can join us later. So that is what is happening today. Now, tomorrow, Sunday the 7th, we normally have the student Q&A call, but this weekend we do not. It's going to happen next Sunday. So if you are expecting to join us tomorrow, you will be the only one turning up. So please don't. We will be having our call next Sunday, where Peter will be talking how to magically deal with viruses. A very pertinent topic. So remember, it's next Sunday. So if you can make it, it's at the normal time at 10 a.m. UK time. If you cannot make it, replay will be available. So please do not turn up tomorrow. Oh, wonderful. The next workshops are possession and prevention and cure is, oh no, sorry, possession, how to prevent it and how to cure it. And then the month after, we'll be talking about runic spells. So if you are considering joining the membership, those are the next couple of topics. So we do encourage you to come and join us for those. The other thing that I need to talk about, and the final thing, is the release of the new abundance course. Well, it's not new, it's upgraded abundance course. So if any of you are interested in the slightest in upping your abundance magically, spiritually, financially, whatever else, emotionally, then this is the course for you. It has been upgraded and it is currently available to all of you at an early bird price. The early bird price is for the next 3 days and it is $147, after which it will be going up to $177. And the upgrade includes a much expanded manual with much clearer instructions and expanded information. We have newly recorded meditations for you, as well as all of the recordings of the previous classes so that you can gain even more context. And there is improved Lakshmi and Ganesha empowerment information. And you also have a new sales orb added. So I do believe Peter talked about this a number of calls ago, where he said that he would create a sales orb. Now, what this orb does is you can place this orb onto anything and it sells. And I've had some great success with that so far. So, yes, Joyce, woohoo. Peter, is there anything else you want to say about your upgraded abundance course?
So the sales orb can be used for digital products as well as physical. It can be attached to a website, anything else, it'll actually close in sales. So it can be a physical thing, it'd be a shop, it can be digital information, whatever you're selling, any level, it'll work on it. So basically the course is just to upgrade a bit, make it really clear so anybody can create abundance, shouldn't be any problems.
And it's also being translated into German, which will be upgraded and available this weekend as well. So if you prefer to receive it in German, then that is available to you. More information on all of this in the recent newsletter that has been sent out to you all. So if you want anything repeated, you can take a look there. That is enough from me. Let's move over to the topic of demonic possession, Peter, because we've got a lot to get through today.
Okay, then, like this, put myself in the middle. Hello. So we had a lot of questions, so I'm going to actually... in my talk, I'm going to be actually covering some of that anyway, and then we'll go into the questions because I know there's a lot to get through. First of all, what I'll talk about is actually knowing the difference between a real possession and when there's shadow elements need dealing with. One of the examples that has come up from several people is that is this case of this French nun who actually died during an exorcism. Now, this is a kind of example of a thing which isn't a real possession. As this often happens in religious situations, because the kind of presence of the kind of priest and the kind of oppressive philosophy you're living in is going to suppress elements of the self. Quite often in that case, it's sexuality. The person denies sexuality is trying to surface all the time. And they see it as a separate entity because they won't own it, and it's like a sexual demon trying to get them. Of course, the more you actually try and exercise that and push it away, the more of a split you're creating. Because what you've really got here is a split in the person. The sexual is being separated from them, is acting as a separate being. You can't go away because it's part of you. When you try and suppress that, and there's more of this kind of religious authority around you, reinforcing that kind of conditioning and trying to force that part of you away, is going to create increase the split. So the extreme case is somebody died from it. No, so you're pushing this kind of philosophy, you're doing damage. So I can't warn people too much about how damaging these oppressive philosophies are. That's because of a situation where you don't need exorcism, you need shadow work. We looked at this before, talking about the shadow, and it's on my darkness course. You have to actually embrace parts of yourself which are not integrated, and that's very important. Because there have been a number of cases of possession, or what they thought is possession, is actually shadow work's needed. Because people are dying apart themselves, and quite often, the biggest one is sexuality. A lot of people won't accept their sexuality because of various religious conditionings, and they keep thinking it's some sexual demons of them. Succubus, incubus, whatever, and think they're having this demon attacking them in their nightmares and whatever. And actually, it's a part of themselves that he's integrating. And the more you kind of judge it, the more hostile it becomes. So you're thinking about your sexuality, it is very much linked with the most animal instincts and actually can become violent. Denied sexuality is one of the most violent of the kind of types of suppression you can have. It ends up becoming almost like a rape. Something's trying to rape you all the time. And as I mentioned, this is not a demon. This is a shadow work is needed. You have to integrate the part of yourself. When you stop judging it and suppressing it, it doesn't come violently anymore. So there's some more psychology needed there to actually heal that person. So I just want to reiterate that it's like it can be really damaging to try and exercise something that isn't really actually a demon. That's actually part of the self. And so bring you back to the importance of shadow work. Real demons, then, first of all, there are those which come from the outside. As I said, there's those coming through drugs, alcohol, when you're always open. And those you create yourselves by suppressing laws into a deep level of the unconscious will become living things. And these are the most common ones. And they're not the ones you're always aware of. It's not something you can experience as a voice in your head telling you what to do and being attacked all the time. It's simply messing some part of your life up. If a law is being reinforced, it means that your life has always been sabotaged. And it happens in such incredible ways. You just know there's some kind of hostile intelligence doing it. Everything goes wrong at the last moment, and it's like you can't understand why. Every single time, what you're trying to get is blocked and destroyed, and it goes wrong, and you don't know what to think. You don't know what's blocking you, what's destroying your life, why it's always there, how it can be so persistent, and how it can get you every single step. That's the kind of demon that's formed when you suppress a law into the unconscious. These are actually the most damaging when you look at it. So many of these other kind of psychological problems people have, it's just in their head and the voice is going on and so on. It's not as bad as when your life is being destroyed in some area. Like you've got law, for instance, that you can never have love, or law that you can't have money. Those areas of your life is always being attacked. You can never have money. You can never have love. He blocks you every single time. And people work so hard to try and get these things and don't know why it's always sabotaged, as if it's beyond anything they can do. And quite often that's true, because the techniques they have are not enough. We've all been studying things like law of attraction and manifestation techniques, but they don't tell you how to deal with the deeper blocks. You try and do and work this thing and it isn't work for you because these blocks are in the way. And the deepest of those blocks is the demon. Beliefs, people understand they can process and release. A law is hard to break. When you break a law, you punish yourself and you find the law still there. The demon becomes intelligent. Now, so there's now a hostile intelligence stopping you every step of the way. That's the difference. So it's not just something you experience in your dreams. It's something that's hidden in the background, just destroying everything. The other thought forms coming from the outside often exist more as intensifying your emotions and your habits and your impulses. As I said, with the kind of, I gave the example on the blog about the example of alcoholism. If an alcoholic dies, his addiction has made him earthbound. He won't go away because he's still trying to get the alcohol. Anybody who's drunk and therefore open the aura, he'll get into the body to experience their alcohol. That's where they get in. And therefore that person's his habit is exaggerated because the alcoholic spirit is now in them. They become alcoholic. They want to drink more and more so the spirit can feed itself. And they become a very bad alcoholic too. That's how kind of these entities, even though like a human in that case, a human spirit getting into the person, exaggerates the problems. These ones tend to act on things that are already in you. They exaggerate your own bad habits, your own kind of blockages, as it were, your own impulses. That's the major difference between the kind of outside possession and the ones which come from inside. In both cases, there's something in yourself to work on anyway. You know, there's a habit there. This thing is kind of attaching to it. That's why it got in. It got in a type of unconsciousness when you're always open to alcohol, drugs, being knocked out through that trauma, whatever. But the ones falling inside you, it's more that you push that bottom so deep, it becomes a demon. And this is where it's important to actually reassess our whole way of actually dealing with our problems. First of all, religious support so many judgments to people. They deny emotions as if they actually know how to handle them. Any emotion you die, you're going to push. You deny, you're going to push inside. It's going to go deeper into your system. When people have judgments, you mustn't feel fear, you mustn't feel hate, all those things. You judge them, therefore push them inside. It's not doing any good. I'm not saying go out and do anything about the hate. I'm saying experience it, welcome it, so until it passes. You have to learn to handle it in a realistic way, not suppress it. And again, when people make judgments, which often come through religion, they're denying some part of themselves and therefore pushing it away. You can push away a part of yourself, you can push away a simple belief. And it's the beliefs that then become laws and then demons. Okay, I just wanted to explain that. Now let's go to questions.
Thank you. Okay, so we do, as I said, we've got a number of them. So I'm going to try and pick out the topic related ones first. The Vatican claims that there is a rising demand from priests of all denominations regarding exorcism training. They claim that there is more demonic interference in the world today. What is your take on this? And also, why do Vatican ordained exorcists need to put on a show of a struggle if a dragon like Maishi can do an exorcism much smoother?
Because quite often, no exorcism isn't real. As I pointed out, it's often with religion, they're suppressing a part of yourself and trying to struggle against something that's actually part of you. It is a struggle. It's a big drama going on, which is actually almost like a psychological trick. A person can feel better. They go through their guilt. They kind of almost like strengthen religious conditioning and therefore become part of that religion, but the problem isn't there anymore because they've managed to deny it more. See, if religion is strong enough in you, you're able to suppress your emotions further because there's such a strong egregore saying this is how you live. You're almost creating a new kind of model of a human being which doesn't have those particular human qualities. So long as you're within that egregore, it's holding you there. When you're not in the egregore, the normal human blueprint is trying to take over and say, no, this is part of yourself you've got to integrate. You need these. You need your anger. You need your fear. You need your whatever, your sexuality, all these things that they try to suppress. And this is a struggle. What they're really struggling is with a human being. So when you remove a demon, it doesn't have to be a struggle because it's not really you. It can be removed and it's gone. You feel different, completely different afterwards. You feel like a cold wind coming out and going and it's gone. You know it's gone. You feel different. The problem has ended. when you have this big struggle going on, it's actually it's almost like a psychotrauma going on. A little trick which actually makes them feel okay, because they are now back under the kind of rules of the religion. They're being forgiven for their sins, and everything's going to be okay. And so, yes, there's going to be more and more demand, because as people have more problems and still be in these religions, more and more people think that they've got some evil entity, because they're not behaving as the church tells them to. And the more problems are in the world, the more people will turn to their religion, because they haven't found the solution anywhere else. Now, here's the kind of limitation. You see, even though the religious people accept it's something outside the logical, outside the science, it's still not everything. It's like this vast sea of possibilities out there. Yet science have taken one piece, religion has taken another. And they think between them, there's nothing else. Actually, there's vast possibilities outside both of them. Science says, okay, we'll deal with this, you deal with that, that's fine. But it says, yes, this is ours, that's yours, that's all that exists. There's so many things that neither of them did deal with. That's the idea of magic and metaphysics. And so, if people don't know how to explore those things, when science doesn't work, they can only turn to religion. And quite often the rational mind doesn't work, because we have souls. We have deeper needs, we have spiritual needs. And aspects of our consciousness we try and deal with, which science doesn't explain them. And the rational system doesn't give you ways of feeling better. It doesn't actually appeal to your soul. So all they've got is religion. And then religion put these laws, say you have to do this. Stay within this egregore and you'll feel better. So as the system is failing, there's more stress in the world. You know, the system doesn't support people. They don't feel supported. They don't feel safe. They feel put down all the time. They'll turn to religion. And they tell them all their problems because of these demons, because you're not obeying God. So all it is really doing is reinforcing the original religious conditioning, which gets stronger as the rest of the system fails. What people need to realize is that both are failing them. They could look elsewhere, and there are other things outside both. You have to become whole. These two pieces might be all very well, but it's not all there is. You have to look at a much, much vaster universe.
Thank you. What do you make of shadow beings?
It can be many things. See, when we deal with shadow work, it's about everything you've denied. Now, what happens then? People often experience these things when they've taken certain drugs, because they're now open beyond the normal kind of view of the world. And the various things which trigger astral experiences, but you'll remember in the astral, there's many things which are all projections of the self. Many things exist. They're not necessarily useful to you, but they all exist somewhere. And there's a shadow realm, of course. There's the underworld stuff where there's darker beings. Many, many possible things exist there. But the question is it useful? Yes, we go and meet dark elephants with some of our magical working to break down certain blocks and laws and so on. They're useful. You find many beings there, you don't know what they do, and they're not useful for anything. Not in our reality anyway, because their existence is so far outside what we need. And when things from the wrong plane don't belong here get in, they tend to cause trouble simply because they don't belong. Their way of doing things is different from ours. They mess things up. And these things we open to through drugs usually, because you're always weakened. We create splits between realities and things from another dimension can come in. So that's the thing when you go deep with drugs. First of all, unconscious is created by an accident or alcohol or something, which knocks you out, creates a hole in the orbit of things around the environment to get in. Certain drugs take you to deep aspects of your consciousness. We've gone beyond this reality, opening doors to other dimensions. That's another kind of hole in the orbit, but it's not almost like not in the physical sense. You don't see it in time and space. It's the door to another dimension. And being some other place is then affecting you. So quite often these shadow beings are coming as effects of drugs or even messing around with the occult without knowing what you're doing. People open dimensional doorways and things get in and start bothering them. Shadow beings, basically anything which you see is shadowy. It can be in so many different things. But most of the time, it's just like lower astral beings, which are not useful to you. They just mess you up a bit.
Do you see demonic entities being used against people as part of MK Ultra or to intimidate people? Some people are physically attacked by entities, stabbed, scratched, spat at, etc.
Well, it can be. You see, anything you do on the astral will then start affecting the body. If you have a strong astral experience and you're damaged, you actually wake up with that body having that damage. You can be scratched on the astral and wake up with a scratch. Now, MKUltra's done a lot of research on these things. They know how to pull people out of the body at night and then mess them around there. And actually, it's been a big part of the actual alien programming as well, with actually almost making hosts for aliens to come in, trying to change, alter you for the, you know, for whatever the agenda they've got. They're working with aliens, basically. And so they have many ways of creating thought forms, not necessarily a real demon, it's an artificial created one. What you could call a servitor, like we use in the psionics, they can create negative servitors. They have enough energy behind them to do some damage. They can be programmed to get into your consciousness and control you and do all sorts of things. Most of these things are human creations. When you really look at the world, it's like there's nothing worse than what humans create. Other demons have the purpose. They're not that hostile. If you look at the word demon, it comes from the Greek. It's a word which means an astral being with wisdom. For the ancient Greeks, there were two kinds. There were good demons called the agathodemon, and there were the more violent kinds of feet of blood. And so, you know, those ones you didn't want to mess with too much unless you know what you're doing. But there were good demons who used to give you guidance and could produce abundance and various things. Different from angels, because angels are looking at your spiritual evolution. Demons being on a slightly lower level would look after your more material needs. They could also give you guidance because they were wise. There's nothing created in the universe that wasn't for some purpose. It's not all bad. Well, nothing is truly bad. But now people can create things for a very negative intention. These are all artificial creations. So yes, MKUltra can create artificial demons to do the damage. There's certain kinds which can be, almost measured for several people of the same kind, and they even have names. We did have somebody actually who came up with names for these things, so they had names like Gary and Larry. But actually, these actually mean something. Gary was the graphene-based augmented reality interface, and Larry was the light-based augmented reality interface. These were things which get into your nervous system, part of the programming which alters your mind and starts controlling you. These are pretty advanced psionic programs. They can be projected into people. They can be strong enough to knock out their consciousness and get in there and control them. Again, this depends on the strength of your aura. If you have a strong aura and you're generally strong in yourself and strong boundaries, they can't get in. But we deal with those in a different way. Again, we fight psionics with psionics. We can actually we can actually neutralize those energies.
The first part of the next question is, are you familiar with the exorcism of Annelise Michel in the Würzburg area in 1976?
Yes, that's like the example I mentioned, when you have a nun in actually within the church, they're trying to exorcise, ends up damaging and even killing, because they're suppressing a part of themselves so deeply, it creates a big split that will end up killing them. That's where you take it too far. What you really needed was shadow work.
Which you've just answered. The second part of the question is, what went wrong? And was there an underlying psychological issue that should have been treated?
Of course there was. Of course there was. She needs to work on a shadow and not go for exorcism. Priests don't understand that. They still see it in terms of you being bad, you're a demon, you need to come back to the church.
And you sound like you have a demon with you, but I think it might be a grass strimmer or something.
Yes, it's a strimmer out there. Yeah. Before you're getting close now, it'll move a bit further away in a minute.
Yeah. It seems a never... It's a forever ongoing task here in Thailand. What about the Sasquatch? I think that's how you say it. Who are they?
Sasquatch.
Yeah.
It can be many possible things. You see, there was no real being called a Sasquatch. They invent these names for things they don't quite understand. In nature, you have various kinds of elementals, okay? Now, think about elementals. They tend to be affected by your imagination in different ways. So where you know the earth spirit works is they take energy from the ethers and release it to matter, give it life. When they're in your presence, they receive from you and release back to you, yourself. So they appear human. Otherwise, they wouldn't be human. They appear these little stocky, earthy human beings because you are there. If a dog sees one, it'll look like an earthy dog. You know, they're shaped by you. So when the earth spirits are shaped just by your form, things like undines, elemental spirits, there are shaped by imagination. So you see that all these elemental forms can take on different forms according to who they're meeting. An example, I knew somebody who saw these hostile goblins in the woods. This is an earth spirit that has become very violent because he was a violent person. Reflected himself back to himself and it became a very aggressive looking form. He thought it was a goblin. When I looked, it was just an earth spirit. So you can see things are taking a form, going to who's there. Now the Sasquatch. Okay, these were almost like a form of earth spirit. Very earthy, because up in the mountains, and it's, you know, they're quite big, like a big troll, big gnome. And they shape the people's imagination because they have certain expectations. Now, this is actually important thing to consider in the occult. A lot of people interpret many things in the occult from their own kind of conditioning and expectation, therefore don't see a clear picture. Sasquatch is this big, hairy, earthy sort of man, a bit like a troll, but he's hairy, because you would expect to be hairy up in the cold, wouldn't you? Something living in the cold has got to have a thick fur. It's fulfilling all the kind of expectations in your mind. What's behind it is an earth spirit. Actually, the Tibetans work with them. I mean, I've spoken to Tibetan monks in the past when I was working with them in with the White Cloud Monastery, and they actually have certain magic they work with, what they call the Yetis, similar to the Sasquatch. So these beings there, you know, they are earth spirits. And being earth spirits, they can have a certain value because they have a different understanding of the elemental kingdom beyond what we have. They can have a certain kind of magic, and of course they can go travel between worlds, appear and disappear and go somewhere else. Like for the Yetis, for instance, up in the mountains, could actually vanish from one mountaintop and be on the next one. And so the monks there were trying to learn teleportation from them. So they can be useful things when you learn to work with them, but they're actually their spirits who can actually manifest physically to a degree because they take form from you, from your imagination, and start forming in front of you. Ones who could actually see them physically are ones who are actually more open to the magic. Stronger in imagination, stronger sense of vital energy that can feed it. Not everybody will see them.
Can demonic entities be caught on camera?
They can be sometimes. Actually, there's something else I used to do with the Tibetan monks in the monastery there. They could actually enchant a camera to photograph any spirit. We did it with fire. We could actually photograph the elementals, the salamanders around the fire. So you'd actually program a camera to pick up the images. It's found that when you've got a good lighting, like in the flash, you pick up orbs. If you've done this, you get your camera out and you're filming somewhere where there's a strong energy, so you see all the orbs appearing. Because it is possible to actually for the camera to pick them up. So because it receives different frequencies, God of these spirits have a frequency outside our visual range. But a camera might have a different kind of frequency range, they will pick up things we're not seeing.
Which courses, actually, you answered this in your blog. So again, if anyone wants to go back to the blog and have a look, then the answers are there. But which courses and or healings from your website serve best for protection from spirits and demonic possessions? And are Kodams able to protect us from spirit possession as well?
Kodams definitely do. The other main one is Tenegadalam. Those two are the first lines of defense. Tenegadalam is like creating a force field, it's going through your energy so you can repel things. Whereas a Kodam is like an angelic being who's there watching and protecting you. So it's like two different kinds of protection, but they work really well together. Of course, the Chandali helps as well. Anyways, you can really burn out any negative attachments.
And so Chandali is available only in the Ultimate Healing, is that correct?
No, you can get the Chandali level separately from my website.
Right, okay. And Tenegadalam is available in a multitude of courses.
Yeah, and separately. If you look at my metaphysical empowerments page, they're all there.
Mm-hmm. You get them separately, and the Kodams?
Of course. Same there, there's a Kodam page. You can buy the Kodams, yeah. But I'm saying though, if you get the psychic protection course, it's much better deal because you get the Kodam and Tenegadalam thrown in at a good price. So, you know, you actually save a lot of money.
Indeed, indeed. And the psychic protection course is being upgraded as we speak. So that will be coming out soon. Moving on to the next question. My brother has suffered from alcoholism for 10 years. My astrological birth chart shows paternal family has alcoholism, but my dad says no one was an alcoholic. I'm assuming he's unaware. How can I journey into the underworld to kill his demons? I assume she means the alcoholic brother.
Yeah, obviously. The thing with underworld journey, it's very useful because the person doesn't have to be there. From your own inner safe place, you can actually join somebody else's underworld and you can hunt out the demons and remove them. In this case, it isn't enough to remove demons because if a person's drinking a lot, there's going to be holes in the aura. So you remove one thing and something else gets in. So
just removing demons or whatever entities there are isn't the answer. You've got to close the Ol Signora. You can do it distantly as well, but you're going to have to use things like the Shri Yantra to build the divine blueprint back to close those holes. What will happen then when the holes close to experience all the unconsciousness coming out again? If you've been under anesthetic, then when you're healing, you actually feel that anesthesia again. You feel numb and floaty. Same with the alcohol liver. So once we go careful with this, if you're healing an alcoholic, he's going to go through a lot of unconsciousness. So don't do while he's driving. If he's cooperative, great. You can get in blind then, do healing. If he's not, you've got to pick times when he's going to be resting. He will go through the unconscious, basically. He needs to do a lot of healing to close those holes. Entities can be removed in the unconscious, yeah. You journey to the underworld, hunt them down. I wouldn't go destroying the human spirits because they need moving on properly. What's happening here is that there'll be alcoholic spirits of the ancestry you've got in. You see, family connection, this can be actually more problematic because they're connected to you. An ancestor who's alcoholic and can't move on is hanging around when you were young, when you always yet formed in the first 3 years of your life, and that's when they get in. A child that's not in its parents' aura all the time and is always open is prone to ancestral possession. Ancestors that haven't moved on tend to attach to the children. So if there are some ancestors who are alcoholics and have moved on that your father wasn't aware of, they can get into you from early childhood. If your brother was left alone any time in his childhood, that's when they get in. So you can go into the underworld and move them on. You need your paranormals to guide you to where they are. So use your big creativity here. If you know how to journey, go into the underworld, your paranormal, get the animal to guide you to these spirits, and then you can actually just move them on. You don't destroy the human spirits, but you can actually guide them across into the light, as it were, close the doors on them. Then you have to do healing to close the holes in his aura from his own alcoholism.
Are clingy, possessive ex-partners who appear as energy vampires also being controlled by demons? How can one resolve and get rid of those kinds of people?
I wrote a separate blog on this a year or two ago, but it's about vampirism, so go back and look on that one because I explained a lot about how that works. So I'd first go back and read that and then come back with questions because that's another involved subject. It's not always about being every entity to them. They're just very needy. You see, if somebody's not being held as a child, there's something missing. See, when you hold a baby, the mother's heartbeat's entraining the baby's heartbeat, making it strong. If they don't have that, it's left with something that's almost life-threatening. It needs to contact other humans to strengthen itself. It almost can't live without attention. That's why it becomes so clingy. It's not an entity, it's a lack in themselves that needs healing. Now, some people actually get very good at then finding the attention they need to actually train off people because they need it. They become very efficient vampires. Some even go through occult training to know how to actually drain people at will very efficiently. So there are different levels of vampirism, but it starts with that kind of lack. The heart needs healing. Removing an entity won't do it. You've got to heal that heart because they were having a lack in their childhood.
How can one protect oneself from picking up demons when one is receiving or given healing and massage of an intimate, but not sexual, nature with someone who has a lot of demons, plus also in close physical contact with people?
In that case, you should set up a protective circle when you start, because if somebody's coming and has got negative energy, make sure you protect the space. If you can call your codams and if you've got them, otherwise do a banishing ritual. Light a candle and do prayers over it, because the thing about candle magic is really useful, because what if you prayed into the candle, it'll carry on so long as the candle is burning. So you can do protective prayers to a candle, have the candle burning in the room, smudge the place, do a banishing ritual, and make sure you are protecting yourself, strengthen yourself before you go in. Don't heal the person when you're in a weakened state. Make sure you're strong at the time. Do your prayers beforehand, do some breathing, whatever you need to do. Call your codems, do your tegandadan to make sure you are not in a receptive space to pick up the negativity. Of course, it all means you have to deal with your own negativity. Remember, things get into resonance. If that negative quality in the other person is something you also resonate with inside, that's when you let it in. So you've got to deal with your own shadow. Remember, your shadow will always come at you through other people. If you've got shadow areas of yourself you're not dealing with, your patients are going to bring them to you. When you do all your shadow work, you find you don't have these problems with your patients anymore.
Lots of links going in the chat, everyone, with related articles, etc. So if you're interested in anything that Peter has been saying, then there's probably a related link in there for you. Moving on to the next question. I would like more information about the plant layer of the unconscious and how we know if we have that issue. So can you just explain what that is for those who have not read the blog yet, please?
Basically, if you look at our evolution, we've been through everything. It's like everything is conscious in the universe. Before plants happened, there was only minerals. We were part of that kingdom. We have memory of being mineral. We have memory of being plant. We have memory of being animal. We've been through all these different stages, which is why we have power plants and power animals and so on, and even power stones, because we actually have been those in the past. And obviously, the consciousness there was quite different. So the plant is more primitive than the animal in a way. It doesn't have physical movement, doesn't have the same kind of nervous system, but it's conscious. But they grow and spread in a different way, particularly ones which grow new fruits. So consider this then. You push the demon down even deeper because you keep suppressing it, don't want to deal with that. And it's bad enough to have a demon sabotage on somebody in your life. As you keep denying things and pushing it away and resisting it and reacting to it, it goes deep and forms a plant. You then, what happens then, the problem occurs in new areas of your life. A common example of this is with pain. You suppress one level of pain, it appears somewhere else. You suppress your emotional pain, suddenly you've got physical pain. Then you've got mental pain. It goes to new areas, trying to find expression. Then suddenly you've got all of them. They all come back. You've got physical pain, emotional pain, and mental pain. And then it's like then you get overwhelmed. It's like that's when you push things deeper, they spread. So you can recognize the demon plants by the spreading of the problem to new areas. It may be that the demon, for instance, it could have been, say, based on law that you can't have anything good. It might be start with money. You find that that's always sabotaged. And as you keep trying to resist that, you fit a new area where you can't have love, a new area where you can't have friendship, a new area where you can't have health. And one area after another is now being destroyed. That's where you see it spreading. It's like the plant is growing new fruits, like new demons, which have the same agenda, but in different areas. Basically, you have a demon plant, your life is totally screwed.
Earlier, you talked about Gary and Larry. Someone would like to know, can this Gary pretend to be a good spirit? I had a spirit once with that name who came into my dreams, but he seemed nice. He was making me a new outfit as an artist with better emotions.
Yeah, you know, that's what they do. They're trying to program you, see. Trying to say you're going to be in you out for the better emotions. It means you're trying to make you a different person. They're saying that you're not good enough as you are. We're going to make you something different. That's not really helping in the long run because you're not dealing with your own consciousness. You're being programmed like a machine. This is what they do. They've been experimental. See, the whole purpose of this is to recondition people into what they want, making into perfect citizens that will fit their society. They'll do as you're told and do everything they want you to do. They're telling you this is good, you're being better. But there's still control. Now, remember, this is the graphene-based one. It comes in through graphene because that's the first substance they put into everything, which is actually one of the main ingredients in all computer technology. When they put it into things like injections, like in vaccines, you know they're doing something that's a bit strange here because this is a computer programming substance, the graphene oxide. So basically, when you've got that into the system, that's how they first start programming the system. Gets into the chemtrails, through the vaccines, various ways. This is the way, and then the 5G and other things like HARP, the various electromagnetic impulses can actually cause the kind of graphene in the body to assemble in certain structures to create the chips. This is how they create the programming inside you. So they have a certain artificial intelligence that's there to rearrange you and change you. It's not really a friend because it's programming you. This is interference.
Could you please say something about bad spirits getting in through gong baths and how to prevent against this as a practitioner and a client?
It shouldn't, but in rare cases, if the person who's practicing the gong is in a very negative state and don't know what they're open to, you don't know what you're bringing in. Think about gongs, these are ways of invoking. Now, they can be very useful when used in the temple and you've got a very holy atmosphere and people are praying and meditating, banging the gong, and it's all those spiritual energies amplified. Suppose the person who's actually doing it isn't very spiritual. They've been taking drugs and everything else. What the gong is amplifying is whatever other dimensions they're opening to, like their entities and so on, they will come in more. In that case, you're actually being subjected to what this person is bringing in. They shouldn't really get a hold unless you're unconscious. However, there are different types of unconsciousness. Even up your self-governance to another person is another way. Things like hypnosis can do that because you're actually not in your own process, you're letting somebody else programming you. Choosing to do that is giving away self-governance, therefore there's unconsciousness. So it depends on your attitude going to this gong bath. Are you going to suddenly surrender and say, this person can do what they like to me? That's when they get in. If on the other hand, you're actually using it as a meditation for your own, you know, you've got your own kind of purpose within this, your own kind of belief system, you know, doing mantras with whatever, and actually making use of it, it's different because you're in conscious control. Give up your self-governance to another person, you're being open to whatever they carry. You shouldn't be doing this with anybody. Even if you go to a holy man who's been very pure, you do all give up your self-governance, you want to grow yourself. But you do it to somebody who isn't very pure, you're definitely going to let problems in.
The next, I was going to say topic, the next comment, will the 33 aura healing psionic help with that too? Now, I'm assuming we're talking about what courses.
That's in the psionic talisman. Remember, if you look at the psionic page, there's certain talismans. You can buy the talismans and put it on the chart. It will help because it's made to heal all 33 layers of the aura. The aura is very complex, there's many layers. This is a very complex talisman, it's a very complex servitus, which actually repair all 33 layers, which deal with the various layers of emotional damage and drug damage and all sorts. So if you build the aura, you're safe.
So a personal experience here. When asleep, not mine, someone in the audience, when asleep, how can I protect myself from a dark shadow entity that has overly hugged me from the back, played the radio loudly by my head side, and even entered my abdomen area, moving in circular movement and poking me and hurting me? How can I protect myself from this entity?
First stage is to a banishing ritual at night. I've written it out in my blog, so you can get that free. It's in some of my blogs. Otherwise, do the psychic self-defense course. You will learn how to actually banish things. Banishing ritual at night means there's nothing negative in that space. If after that there's something going on, it's not an outside entity, it's something inside you, something you need to look at. That's where you do the shadow work. But basically, the first thing I recommend people is to do my psychic protection course. The various exercises there, apart from banishing ritual, you learn the kodam and the tenor dalam. You also learn this middle piddler exercise, which clears all your chakras through. Doing that at night is also really good if you learn that, because then you have a total purification of your chakras and clearing the energy channel. There won't be even any negative to attach to you then. So that's the first thing to learn. That's the most simple and compact way of learning, because there are several techniques there that will work really well.
How can I know what my animal spirit is?
Your journey. Well, that's the basic way, but obviously you can simply go by whatever animals you're drawn to. Do you have a favourite animal that you feel close to? Start with that, because quite often those animals are close to you. And you can relate to them a certain way because they have certain powers, certain abilities in them that you resonate with that needs to be awakened inside you. So quite often you admire something, it's because it's a reflection of something in you. This happens with people as well, quite often you experience as envy. When you envy a person, it's because they are actually expressing something that's hidden in you that you haven't fully awakened. Animals do this too. An animal will reflect to you something of your own strengths that you need to awaken, and it'll help you awaken it. So first of all, see what animals you really admire, what you feel close to, what you really love to have with you, because that's generally true. You have a few more than that one. You can have more than one power animal. When you start journeying to the underworld, you start meeting them. And you simply look at which ones are friendly, which ones aren't. If you go to an animal that's baring its teeth and snarling, it doesn't want to work with you. Don't go there. If an animal's friendly, bring it on, bring it in with you, and it's like it's going to help. You can have several power animals. So start off by going by what animals you really like, what you feel close to, then journey and find them.
How exactly is a demon tree or vine uprooted?
You've got to go into the underworld very deep. And this is often beyond to what people journey through in the underworld by normal means. This with the dark elves come in handy. From the underworld, you can go even deeper to the world than the dark elves. So it's dark, you can't see a thing, but you learn to let dark elves guide you. They can take you to where the demon tree is and help you uproot it. And you need special tools. This is beyond the most journeying courses you come across. I mean, on my journeying course, but in the shamanic healing course, we actually give various elemental weapons, basically for some of the kind of Bonjankri and Vedic traditions, things like the Thurber and the Trishul and so on, which are used to destroy demons. So the tools you'll need when you get there to destroy these things. But basically, you've got to journey very deep into the unconscious, beyond where you can see, into the very dark areas. That you need the dark elves to guide you. Or an animal which loves the dark. Snakes are very good. They often churn deep down and they use other senses rather than sight. Twins are your power animals, you see. Power animal might take you there. Dragon can take you there. Dark elves can take you there. But you're going to have really expand upon your kind of journeying abilities. The other simple way, if you notice on the Ultimate Healing course, we give this journey to Creator. When you get good at that and go to creative, you can actually get creative to do anything for you. As long as you know what you're asking and then simply observe it, it'll happen.
Is that the only course that the Journey to Creator is in?
I put it in as part of the advanced Reiki training as well.
Right.
Level four was about connecting to Creator, you see, and so I put the Journey in for that.
Okay, thank you very much. I saw a wolfman in like a cosmic form, front face and side face profile. Is this my spirit animal or a dark entity?
If it's a wolfman, it's not an animal, but what it could be is like a joint being between you and the wolf. It's interesting how these kind of were beings form. I mean, I used to speak to this old witch, Margaret Bruce, used to be up in the north of England. She's not alive anymore, but she described some of her experiences when she was working with her animals. For instance, she used to run a little small holding. She'd come in to see her animal, her cows every evening. One day she saw this person with a cow's head walking past, meeting each one of the cows, and it seemed and gave her a bit of a fright at first. Then she realized it was actually the kind of group consciousness, the egregore of her with the animals. Because she was bonding with animals, group consciousness formed, which is a mixture of in between. This is what where beings are. If you relate to an animal so very well, you're going to form a being that's in between you and it. So where beings is actually showing a very strong connection to an animal form. This is where certain children become shapeshifters. They take on the animal form so much they can become it or become something in between. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just it's simply a bond between the animal and the human.
And we did have a question come in regarding shapeshifters, mm-hmm. which is, what are werewolves, skinwalkers, sorcerers, or non-human shapeshifters, or something else entirely?
As I said, the were beings are basically elementals created between you and the animal. And the person can actually learn to shapeshift and become so close to the animal. This is something which is over many, many years. It's not easy. I know there's a lot of people out there trying to sell little spells to transform you, but it's not happen overnight. You know, you can actually, it can help, but you know, somebody can introduce you and give you a bit more resonance, but basically you're going to build a strong bond to the animal and you actually build a kind of were-being and you can even become it. These are the possibilities we have. So skinwalkers and things, well, shapeshifters is like, because you're learning to develop the animal so well you can turn into it. Same with the skinwalkers. One of the old Norse practices called skin fading or hide fading. Once you've done a lot of walking where you actually learn to become other things, you then gather these things around you, let your boundary vanish and become one with everything, one with a web, with one web of weird, called the hide fading. So once you learn to actually go beyond the identity which you have as a form, you can actually shift your form. So the skin itself seems to be vanishing and changing another form. So this is where the idea of the skin walking comes from. These come from older practice where people are actually interpreting differently these days.
Is sleep paralysis caused by demons?
Can be. What's happening there, the person's opening the astral, something's affecting them and they're not in control of themselves. And it's not even like necessarily a demon. Some astral entity, yes, I wouldn't call them all demons because there's many different things out there. But if you actually reopen the astral, not in control of yourself, then things on this astral plane can start pulling you out.
Can one pick up demons from sleeping in the same bed as someone who has demons, as the unconscious is more open when you are asleep? Would the banishing ritual and doing Tanaga Dalam or middle pillar before going to sleep protect me from picking up any entities?
Yes, it will. They would protect you well. Thing is, in sleep, you're not really unconscious as such. You're in an altered state of consciousness. You are more open, yes. If you sleep with somebody, then you're sharing energy with them at night. Your unconsciousness starts to blend to a degree. It won't happen very quickly, like if you're drunk. If you're drunk, it's a different thing than you are, it's wide open. But sleep is not the same as being knocked out of an unconscious anesthetic. It's a natural process. We actually, although the body shuts off, so your mind gets other areas in your dreams and so on, it's an altered consciousness rather than actually unconsciousness. You're open, yes, because your mind's not discriminating, so you'll pick up a certain amount. Of course, there's a choice here as well, if you look at it. Choosing to sleep with the person who's got entities, you choose to share energy with them. So, of course, you're going to let some in eventually, but not as much as when you are unconscious. You go to bed drunk with them or take drugs with them. But if, you know, again, choices involved. If you're actually choosing to seal your aura before you go to sleep with them, you're not going to let them in. So the middle pillars, banishing rituals, all the things will work very well.
Before my friend Tony left his body this February, for several weeks beforehand, he kept seeing numbers in the space around him and was amazed that I could not see them. He was on morphine once a day, but saw the numbers even when the morphine had worn off. Mm-hmm. I feel numbers probably are there, although not sure why, seemingly hanging in midair. But sadly, it seemed to me that although he thought them interesting, he was also fairly tormented by them and believed that he had to keep moving around them into a certain order using mental willpower as mm-hmm. So he no longer listened to music, which previously he loved doing. My question is, are there numbers hanging there? And was the belief in having to move them a kind of possession?
No, basically, if he's dying, it's because you're in between the worlds. As you get more to the causal plane, it's all very geometric. You're looking at patterns and things which form this world. Go beyond the astral to the create causal plane, you get more to patterns, you get to numbers and things. You see these things in like the Fibonacci sequence, you see in nature and in the Ammonites and so on, there are patterns which form a life. As you're getting more towards the other plane, because you're in between worlds, as you're getting close to death, you'll be actually more in that world. But how you experience them, it depends on your own kind of conditioning. You filter it in a certain way. In a way, he's right, because these number patterns are reflections of what's manifesting for him. Even if he can't logically understand what they're creating, he knows somewhere inside, if he gets the right number pattern, he's going to create a better reality than if he has a negative number pattern. Doesn't quite know how to do it, but actually, yes, he's in that kind of reality. He's getting into that reality as he's getting ready to move on.
Sorry, typing at the same time. Okay, let's move on. Sent you the course information. Next question. Ask that one. What kind of entities demand blood sacrifice and what kind of entities are attracted to blood sacrifice?
Basically, the more animalistic ones. If you look at the nature in general, you've got things that eat plants, things that eat other animals, predators. This reflection of the astral plane is very much the same as this plane. You can have both there as well. Some spirits, you offer things like flowers, scent. It's like the vegetable level is what they feed on. Other more animalistic feed of blood. Life force of animals. This way, there is old rituals like in Voodoo, you sacrifice animals to them, they feed off the blood. They feed off the life force of an animal to give it strength in this world. They don't necessarily need it in their own plane, but to manifest here to do work for us, they need energy for our plane. They need that animal energy. Use this in Voodoo. When you want to actually make change reality, you need that spirit to be able to act here. It needs the blood to be able to do that. It's fine in its own world, but to work in this world, it needs food of this plane. Not always blood. Some of these Loire use other things, like give them rum and cigars and various foods. There's different ways of feeding them. And they can also be trained. In the Indonesian magic, there are ways of taming these spirits to teach them to feed off oils and scent and incense rather than blood. They can be adapted. It's simply that if they're very animalistic in their nature, and they want to work with you in a certain way, they respond to your primitive instincts, your lust, your desires, all those things, which are also important part of us, that's what their level of feeding upon.
Oh, I thought I was on mute. I'm not. Okay, plant medicines are becoming very mainstream now, but I know that many of the ceremonies are being led by very inexperienced and quickly trained people. When the portals are opened wide via psychoactive plant brews, if the ceremony leader is not trained in the realm of disembodied spirits or has entities themselves, what dangers are involved for the participants?
Yes, it is dangerous. I've seen this so many times. People have gone to these ceremonies and come up more messed up because it's not been protected properly. And the leader will certainly have some excuse, it's all your stuff, whatever. But no, they're not holding space properly. To become a shaman is quite intense training to do it properly. You have to know how to deal with these entities. You have to actually be able to see the other person, know what's going on. So you know when you need to act to move the entities. You know how to protect the sacred space, hold it so entities can't get in. And of course, you must be carrying entities there yourself. So a person who's not properly trained and carries entities is going to contaminate all these people in this group. And of course, they're taking this stuff, it's opening them. Songs and things that the shaman sings all affecting you. Proper healing songs are great, but people learn songs without even knowing what they mean. One of the shamans I was training with, there was people there who wanted to sing their own songs. He said, no, you don't even know what singing. He said, these are conjuring demons. Remember, there are dark shaman out there as well. You might learn a song without knowing what it is, and it's conjuring something dark. So the training has to be complete. You have to know what you're singing, what you're bringing in. You have to understand the songs that you're using. So you need somebody who's actually has the authority to use the songs because they've done the diatas and so on, has a full power of them, as well as make sure they're the right songs. You can do a lot of damage by doing these things in a messed up way. You're opening to doors, and some people do this deliberately. They'll open people to the negative entities because this is part of their programming, what they're here to do. They're trying to feed entities, and they can feed them human beings. People do that, so do be careful.
I have heard that due to the widening audience of plant ceremonies, the elemental spirits and the plant shamans can be working with a negative agenda, which you have just confirmed, sometimes involving negative ETs. As we are experiencing a broadening of consciousness and moving into 5D, it's become a battlefield against liberation and sovereign ascension versus the lower vibrational 3D. What are your thoughts, please, and how can we help others to become more aware of what events they are participating in?
Well, this is about playing the basics of how ceremonies work. As I said, it's like the shaman has to be knowing what he's doing, but also you have some dark shaman who are doing it deliberately. Particularly in those groups like MKUltra, they're getting into things like this because they know it's a way in. See, my memory, when I first saw ayahuasca of how it was used in the past, people took it to protect themselves from aliens. You go out into the jungle in a certain place with the plants all with you and actually used to shut them out. But now the aliens got wise, they know this, people use this to protect them. They'll try and get in and actually find openings so they can actually use to get in. This is what they do when they let people mess with it. You've got shamans who work with the wrong people, as it were, or the wrong cause, wrong songs, whatever. They can actually use this ayahuasca to open stuff that you don't want. Bypass natural intelligence and actually allow possession. There are people actually using it to bring in these negative forces and aliens. Yeah. And that's made mainly under CIA, MKUltra. MKUltra is a branch of CIA, by the way, that's who's behind it. And they do a lot of work in the Amazon jungle to find these ways in. So the whole plant medicine thing is under heavy attack. One has to just be careful with it.
How do we detox from anesthetic and the best way to do it, please?
Well, first of all, you need the basic detox from everything. If you take your raw foods and juices and all that and your minerals and enzymes, it'll draw everything out. But the main thing is you're going to experience anesthesia as it comes out. As you detox, you feel all floaty and numb again as it leaves the body. It can be done, you know, with the nutrients. Lots of raw juices. Cilantro is a particularly good one for this. Another one was a small amount of thuya. That's a kind of form of cedar, a low-resin cedar berry. A little bit of that mixed in with the other plant medicines and things and herbs and juices can cleanse the system very well. But also the point holding. Remember, you need to release the unconsciousness. When you hold gonad points, you clear all the unconsciousness out, so you release all the anesthetics. And then when you do that, the entities come out too.
What about the nanotech?
Nanotech, well, I'm creating Psynex for that because it's very complex. If you look at my Psynex page, I've done things for disrupting the AIs and all that because it is needs a complex program.
I was wondering if the mineral peat stuff that I drank today, if that would help me remove any nanobots.
It'll help because it's any natural thing with high energy is going to actually help the body return to its divine blueprint. Of course, the Sri Yantra is good for that as well. So Sri Yantra is the first thing to actually get your energy field right, keep it back to its correct configuration. But you know, I made the Psynex especially to deal with this nanotechnology to knock it out of the system.
And we've got time for one final question that was pre-submitted. So we've gotten through a lot today, a lot of the pre-submitted, the majority of, and also the majority of the questions in the chat. Apologies, we haven't had the opportunity or the time to go through all of them. If your question was not asked, then please do put it in the MeWe group. But one final one, please, Peter, you may want to answer it now, or you might feel it's more relevant for the workshop later. Can I remove dark entities from my grandsons, age 4 and 17, without harming them or picking up the darkness myself? I seem to pick up negative energy so easily from people and places.
First of all, protect yourself. You probably need things like the 10 and 11, the Kodam, and restrict your own energy system. But yes, of course you can. If you do the dragon magic, and the dragon king can pull them all out. It doesn't harm them, it doesn't harm you. As long as you've got positive energy working with you, it'll actually neutralize all the negative. You can do it through the dragon magic, you can do it through the Kodam, you can do it with the Psynex. Not the dark Psynex, of course, that's for attack. But you know, if you go to base ionic plate, you can strip the person, you can get frequencies for the possessions and neutralize them.
Thank you very much. Once again, if your question was not asked, then apologies. Please do copy your question and make sure that you put it in the MeWe group, and Peter will get to that question as soon as he can. Lots of links in the chat as well. So when this recording is posted, if you want to look back at anything, then please do, including all the links. And for those of you joining us for the Dark Psionics, we will be speaking to you in 28 minutes. So please go and refresh yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And we will speak to you all very, very soon. In the meantime, have a wonderful month, and we'll see you on the next Q&A. Thank you very much, everyone, for your participation.
Yep, and see you all soon.
Bye.
Bye.